Could Australia become a global dumping ground for carbon dioxide waste? That's the question from environmental experts who say the Australian government is quietly reframing national climate policy, a debate driven by recent legislative changes and discourse that repositions carbon and gas as essential in achieving net zero. One report highlights a future where Australia becomes an international carbon dumping space by increasing carbon capture and storage with CCS integrated as core national infrastructure. The Wire's Sam Giorgio spoke with Louise Morris, advocate from the Australian Institute, to find out more.
So CCS, as it's commonly called, or as many of us call it, carbon pollution dumping, is a technical process that proposes to capture CO2 emissions, mostly from fossil fuels, and then condense it into a liquid form of CO2 and then dump it either under the ground or under the ocean. So it sounds incredibly simple. Unfortunately, it hasn't really worked.
And in your article, you talk about the government quietly reshaping national climate policy. Where does carbon capture storage come into this? And have there been other shifts in climate policy that are concerning to you?
I'm deeply concerned by the language we're seeing that's signalling the shifts in climate policy, where we're hearing a lot about the climate reality. So the government seems to have backed away from any commitment to taking action on climate change and now doing the, well, you know, we've got a climate reality, which is we're approving new fossil fuel projects. We've got this commitment to net zero, but, you know, we keep polluting more. So what we're going to do is propose to dump the CO2 pollution largely under the ocean, sometimes under land as well, and that will help us towards net zero.
The Australian federal government strongly backs carbon capture. Is the use of CCS a sign that renewable energy isn't being taken seriously by the government, as they're still looking for ways to seemingly justify fossil fuels?
It feels like we've got two heads in government here. Obviously, we've got Minister Chris Bowen, who's, you know, he signed us up to the Belém Declaration at COP30 to phase out fossil fuels, and he's leading the charge on trying to get this energy transition moving towards renewables. I will note that the last quarter of 2025, AEMO actually showed that domestic use of gas especially is on the decline and renewables is up. So there's good stuff happening. We cannot forget that. But then we've got this other side of the coin in the federal government, which is very much led by the Minister for Resources, Madeleine King, who is just throwing everything at trying to dump carbon pollution under the ocean to allow more fossil fuel projects.
You mentioned it's stored underground. Are there any environmental concerns or issues that this could cause?
The concerns on this start from every point of the supply chain, and this is where it's important to realise that the CO2 is not stored as we'd imagine it, as this invisible gas. It is condensed, so it's condensed and supercooled, ironically, which they use fossil fuels to fuel this process, stuck on ships as a liquid form, shipped around the globe is the new proposition, pumped through pipes, through hubs, one of which is proposed at Middlearm, which brings into play the Minister for the North, which is Darwin, through processing hubs, which of course have communities around it, through long pipelines, either under the ocean or underground, and then dumped into some chamber, which is normally where fossil fuels have been sucked out of. And this is where CCS serves its initial purpose for design, which is increasing the pressure of tired old wells, which are running out of oil and gas. And by increasing pressure, you can suck out the last dregs. So if you want to be glass half full about it, it's almost like a circular economy for the fossil fuel industry of extract the stuff, burn it, create pollution, capture a little bit of it, condense it, pump it back into that big reservoir under the ground, suck out the last dregs, claim some offsets. There you go. Sweet ledger book. We make it look like we're helping with net zero while keeping on profiting from exacerbating climate change. How does some creative accounting allow us to present on some budget ledger somewhere that, oh, look, we're progressing towards net zero, because 40 years of CCS being used globally has just demonstrated it does not work. So we've got all these projections of, from projects in Norway to here in Australia with Gorgon, of it will capture XYT, 1,000 tons. They don't, they haven't, and it's been going for 40 years. And then the industry just keeps saying, but if you just give us more subsidies and more assistance, we can do better. After 40 years, I think we can reliably say it does not work. And if this was a car that for 40 years the brakes hadn't worked and the airbags keep failing, I think you'd write it off as a really badly designed car and move on to something else.
What are the main motivators for the push to use this carbon capture storage?
I mean, in really simple terms, it's the thrive and survive strategy for fossil fuel industry. They need this unicorn, which they know will not technically deliver, to keep going that little bit longer and show to governments, investors, and the PR agencies of, look, we're taking climate change into consideration. We're going to keep doing what we do, but we're going to dump some of that pollution under the ocean, under the ground, and then stick a concrete cap on it and hope it goes well. And this is where it gets incredibly dangerous. And you've already mentioned, what are some of the environment risks of communities and landscapes around these areas are at risk from CO2. And we've seen in America, in Mississippi, at around a town called Satasha, where the pipelines which have transported super condensed CO2 have leaked and have caused mass hospitalization events, death of crops and death of livestock, because CO2 is actually what's used in abattoirs to kill pigs and other animals.
In your article, there was another mention. There's fairly widespread concern that Australia is positioning itself to become a global carbon dumping ground. Could you elaborate on these concerns?
So these concerns became very real way back in November 2023 when Australia amended something called the Sea Dumping Act, which kind of says what it is on the box. And from that point on, CO2 is no longer a prohibited substance. So what that did when Senator Wong pushed through the Senate in a midnight sitting that no longer having CO2 as a prohibitive substance means that countries like Japan and South Korea, who buy huge amounts of our gas and burn it, can now capture some of that CO2, ship it back to Australia and dump it under our oceans. And a key first mover on that one is a proposal by a Japanese company, Inpex, who has a number of operations in Northern Australia, are proposing to both keep extracting gas through a place called the Bonaparte Basin, which is offshore of Northwest Australia, and then ship CO2 back from Japan, pump it through the Darwin Middle Arm port, and then dump it off the Bonaparte Basin, all helping with the offsets, magical accounting to keep going with business as usual. And this has really signaled a new era of the fossil fuel industry, not just for Australia, but globally, of these ships that will be crisscrossing the globe trying to dump carbon pollution so countries can be pointing at that going, look, we're trying to meet some net zero targets, knowing that on average, no project has ever achieved anything like its projected targets. And what it means for Australia is we have signaled we are open for business to be the world's carbon pollution dumping ground. It's incredibly dangerous and stupid.
Queensland, I think a couple of years ago, banned the use of carbon capture storage. Has this been maintained? Because there was obviously concerns with farming and a lot of groups who opposed it. What's the importance behind that?
That work by, it was really led by a lot of Queensland farmers who saw very plainly that proposals to dump carbon pollution under various areas of Queensland was an extreme threat to the aquifers and the water supply of that area. Of CO2, if it comes in contact with water, creates a, soda water is a nice way of saying it, but it acidifies the water. So it would make that critical groundwater supply, which people live off and industry runs off, unusable and polluted. So there was an incredible push by groups such as Lockford Gate, independent farmers, even One Nation got behind the ban on CCS in Queensland. So people who have to consider living with the reality of it are very clear that this does not pass the pub test and does not pass the farmer test either, which is where we see the next iteration of what the government and fossil fuel companies are trying of, how about we just send it offshore? So dump it out of the ocean where no one can ever see what's going on out there. If it goes wrong, not our problem, you know, who's actually monitoring? And it also comes into this new push into dumping under the ocean. If it happens, there is the requirement of, on average, every 5 years for a technology called seismic blasting to be done over those areas to monitor for any, they call it migration, which is a very nice word for leaks, any leaks or issues out there. And seismic blasting is one of the most destructive technologies used by fossil fuel companies out in the ocean, which is incredibly loud blasts of air pressure, which turns into sound, which penetrates the ocean floor and gives data back on, you know, what's down there from rock formations to gas to oil or CCS. And these blasts, if we convert it to human ears, it's about the equivalent of the Hiroshima bomb. So we need a commitment from state and federal governments that no more public money will be given to this industry. If the fossil fuel companies wanted to have a crack at CCS, they need to fund it. They won't fund it because they know it does not work after 40 years of trying.
Louise Morris, advocate from the Australian Institute, speaking with The Wire's Sam Giorgio.